Welcome back to another Valley Sports Talk interview. Joining us on our show today is Nipissing men's volleyball player Mark Marchand. Mark, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you, Noah?
I'm great. I want to thank you for giving up a bit of your time to jump on with us. Before we get into it, I'll let you do your own intro and a bit of background sort of on you.
So my name's Mark Marchand. I play on the varsity volleyball team here at Nipissing. Been playing volleyball for about 3, 5 years now. I was a high-level hockey player my whole life and then got into volleyball halfway through my 16U year, and then played 16, 17, 18U, got recruited here, and now I play on the varsity team here.
So you just mentioned that you were sort of like a late comer to the volleyball game. How did you sort of start in with volleyball? Because as you mentioned, you were a high level hockey player. So what sort of you just sort of just decided to play on what a high school team one day or a club team, and then it sort of just took off?
Yeah, so my high school principal was actually an Olympic beach volleyball referee. And he'd always been like, "Oh, play volleyball, play volleyball." And I was like, no." And then like grade 10 came around, I gave it a shot and I fell in love with it. So then I just kind of stuck with it from then on out.
Gotcha. So yeah, you just finished your third year, correct? Because you're the same year as me. Give me sort of a breakdown of like your first 2 years, because I know like for most sports, first like year, first second year, you're sort of like obviously a rookie on the team. Then second year, give me sort of how you shaped your game the first 2 years of your career.
So having played like minimalist volleyball in my life, I was not good. I came in here and was like a little worried that I was probably going to get cut from the team, even though I was recruited. I was not good. So my first year, I played three sets in a 20-game season. Stuck with it though, grinded it out. A lot of the senior guys sort of encouraged me that it's how it normally goes and whatnot. And it was a bit of a changing moment for me because growing up with high level hockey, I was always naturally pretty good at it. And I was always like one of the guys they would lean on. So, first year was a little rough in that sense. I didn't play a whole lot, but I learned a lot about the game. And then last year, my second year, I saw the floor a bit more, got some playoff experience in a game. But I got to train beside a guy who we graduated last year who was a part of the national team and now plays pro. And so he taught me a lot. So sort of just trying to be a sponge and soaking up all of the knowledge and learning as much about the game as I could.
So just jumping back, take me through your recruiting process, because obviously you were a late, so I'm assuming since you were like most recruiting schools I know for other sports, they start like sort of younger, like you get recruited sort of at a younger age. So since you sort of joined late, take me through that process.
So I don't know about other sports, but I know for the OUA, so Ontario for volleyball at least, I'm pretty sure it's the entirety of the OUA, they cannot speak to an athlete until like somewhere in September in their grade 10 year, I'm pretty sure is the
Yes,
rule.
I believe that is something around that.
So I was nowhere near even giving any like even getting anybody an email or a call because I could barely, hit a volleyball. But so my 17U year, I was playing a year up, I was playing 18U Durham Attack. And I looked at a few schools, a few colleges. Then I looked at Nipissing and I was really intrigued. And so I had sent the coach Eric Young an email because they were playing Trent in Peterborough, which is close to my hometown. And I said, "Hey, I'd love to meet you, shake your hand. I'm really interested in coming to Nipissing. I play volleyball. I'd love to maybe get a shot on your varsity team." So I met him at Trent and had a conversation with him before the game. And he said, "Oh, thank God, not another 6 foot outside because I am pretty tall for my position." And then we kept in touch throughout my grade 11 and 12 year. In February of my grade 12 year, I went up there for a visit, for an official visit, I guess. And so I practiced with the team, met with the coach, met the guys. And then I was actually offered a red shirt spot to come the following year. So starting September of 2020, I was like, this is awesome. Like, this is what I want to do. And then COVID hit and I was like, do I really want to go to school? Am I ready to go to school yet? So I ended up taking the year off. I planned to victory lap, but with the way that school was set up and COVID and all that, I'm like, I'm not going to enjoy this. So I ended up just working for the year. And then I came in 2021, September of 21, and I was a rostered athlete. And I'm pretty sure it was because we just didn't have a whole lot of left sides. Otherwise, I probably would have been a redshirt again.
So yeah, so I'm not, as I mentioned before we started, I'm not too familiar with volleyball. So give me sort of the rundown of your position, you know, what's expected from you, and sort of like the, if you said that Younger said you're sort of a larger or like a taller outside hitter, give me sort of like what you're looking for in your position.
So at the highest level of volleyball, like I am normal, if not even maybe on the lower, like the smaller side for an outside hitter, because everybody in volleyball at that level is massive. For university in Canada, at least, I'm pretty average sized as a left side. 6'4", 6'5" is where you want to be at least. A lot of very successful outsides are smaller, a lot are taller. So my first 2 years. First 3 years, I guess, actually, I played in what's called the P2 position. So I was a left side that had a bigger block when I'm in the front row versus the other left side because there's two of us on the court. So left side is sort of like a Swiss Army knife in volleyball. Certain positions don't pass, other positions don't play in the back row, other positions don't hit balls. So at the university level, at least, it's both your left sides and a libero who pass. So I had to pass. Then obviously I get to the front row, I would hit block, all of that. We're normally referred to as the garbage can of the game because we get the most amount of sets, but there are a lot of out of system and like broken play where they kind of throw a ball out there. So we get a lot of sets to make an attempt at and score, but a lot of them are often, they're called out of system sets. So it's when somebody who's not the setter is setting the ball and they just push a high ball to the rafters and give you a chance to go at it.
How often does that usually happen that a setter doesn't actually get the pass?
I mean, it depends on who you're playing. Some teams, like McMaster this year, they had three or four guys who were in like the top 10 in Canada for service aces because they serve really hard. So you would hope that I'd say at least 70% of the time off of serve receive your setter setting the ball. But on defense, it's probably closer to 50, 40.
Gotcha. So as mentioned, you just finished your third season. I know you guys did make the playoffs, but you played McMaster. Give me sort of your thoughts or a recap sort of on this season.
So last year we graduated, the past 2 years, we've graduated a lot of super old seniors who've been with the program for a lot of years. And this year we brought in five or six first years, and a lot of them are playing. So we had a super young team, and at the start of the year, we didn't look very good. At the start of the year, if you told me we were going to make playoffs, I would have laughed in your face and said, you're funny. But we went to Portugal as a team in October of a reading week. A lot of fun, played horrendous volleyball. We had 2 weeks until the start of our season and we were abysmal. Like, I was like, we're not going to win a game in the OUA. So we had a tough first half. We went 2-8 in the front half, I believe was the record. And then we sort of picked our act together in the back half and won four must-win games, which pushed us into the play-in game. So this year there was an 8-9 play-in game to make the playoffs against Waterloo. So we went down to Waterloo on a Wednesday, played them. We went up two sets to none. They came back and won the next two. We went to a fifth set tiebreak. We ended up winning that 15-12 and then made the playoffs. So for having a super young team and learning how everybody plays and how to play together, it was successful in that, but I think there's a lot of room to grow, and with such a young core, like this team can go so far going forward because you're not going to lose when you're big guys for a while.
Yeah. So yeah, my next question, as you said a couple of minutes ago, was the Portugal trip. So obviously that's a super cool experience just throughout your university career to go to Portugal to play some teams down there. So give me sort of a recap on that trip and then maybe like your favorite moment from it or like a couple of highlights from that trip.
So we were in Portugal for 8 days. We left the Thursday before reading week. We're gone all reading week, came back on the Saturday or the Sunday, something like that. So when we were there, we traveled with our men's basketball team and played four games. So we played against two Spanish teams that are, I can't remember if they're club or pro, if they are, they're low level pro. Very different ball over there. A lot of undersized guys actually playing in those leagues, but they all jump really well and have really good shoulders and hit the ball really hard. We didn't play great ball. We lost those two, and then we played another Spanish team, and they were not as great. We won that game, and then we played a final one in the hometown of Castelo Branco, where we were staying, against their club team, which is not anywhere near as old as us or as depth as we are. So we won that game. It was a ton of fun. Never been to Portugal, so that was pretty cool. I got to run around Portugal for 8 days. My favorite moment or highlight would probably be like the scooters you can rent on your phone that are like the electric ones. We were in Lisbon and we got let loose for like an hour or two, and like five or six of us just rented those and tapped our Visa cards and we're like running them around Lisbon, and it was a ton of fun. And then we went to the Benfica soccer stadium and toured that, which is crazy. Heard some insane stories about the fan base and some of the crazy stuff European soccer fans do. And we got to watch a Benfica pro basketball game where Tony Parker actually plays. So that was pretty cool to see an old
He plays
NBA
there
guy
like
play
right
around.
now, like you watch them play.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. That's very cool. Yeah, I remember you telling me that story about the scooters where all your teammates' visas got, or their visas got tapped
Yeah.
because
So
they didn't
none of
sell them.
them really thought to, maybe let their bank know they're going to Portugal. And if their visa started to tap all over the place in Europe, that they weren't, being robbed or had their info stolen. I have a travel visa. And mine didn't get declined. So a lot of the guys tapped their visa like once in the mall on the first day, and then it declined, and they had to rely solely on the euros they brought for cash. But mine didn't. So we were trying to get the scooters going. We only had so much time, and their visas weren't working. So I ended up tapping my visa like five or six times to get everybody going.
What is like the language barrier for those teams you were playing? It's like, was it all like, I don't like is Portuguese or Spanish, or were there some
So
decent?
the Spanish teams were they were speaking primarily Spanish, and then the two Portuguese teams were Portuguese, but they all sort of had some ability to communicate in English, some substantially better than others. We actually had a guy that we played Instagram DM one of our guys because he was looking at coming to Canada for school and wanted to play. And we laughed for probably half an hour on the bus ride because we were trying to read the messages they were sending, and we were trying to send him messages, and it just wasn't lining up. But it was pretty good. Plus, Ricardo on the men's basketball team actually lives in Portugal, so if we were ever really in trouble, we could just get
Sort of work
Rikita
with a translator.
translated.
Let's just hope he doesn't take money out and gamble like Shohei's. But
Yeah.
anyway, wrong sport. We just finished year three for you. As you mentioned, you're a very young team. So what's sort of the preparation like or expectations going into next year for your team?
So the league is wide open for a first time in a while this year, and especially next year. There's always been sort of one or two, or sometimes three, even four teams that are like, these guys are good. They have a bunch of crazy good guys. It's gonna be tough to beat them. But this year and next year too, the league's really open. There isn't a whole lot of super teams, and we have a young core that's super successful. We had two guys, our setter's a rookie and our right side's a rookie, who are both on the OUA all rookie team. And then our setter was actually a U Sport all rookie setter. So we lost, of our starting lineup, we lost one middle who's graduating, and we lost the left side who's graduating. But we have a lot of options. So I would assume that, like, my plan personally is I can see us going pretty far into the playoffs. The program's never won a playoff game, so I would like to see that happen while I'm still playing.
So what is sort of, I know obviously as university students we have to work during the off season, but like what is like a volleyball sort of preparation off season? I'm assuming you do some sort of workout over the summer. What does that sort of look like from a volleyball perspective?
So the off season's it's viewed as the time to sort of like put pounds on and like go hard in the weight room. So we obviously have like a program we use in season, but it's a little lighter and sort of maintenance just to keep our bodies feeling good and not try to kill ourselves in the weight room, because we have to perform Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But the off season, the workouts are a lot longer and a lot heavier. So a lot of guys focus on like, I want to jump higher, I want to hit harder. So they grind in the weight room. Some guys go the other route and play beach and workout, which is a lot to do. But you're viewed sort of as like, now is your time to really show a lot of gains in the weight room, which can reflect on the court a lot.
I know you just said that some people go to beach. I think you mentioned to me in class that you're going to train with somebody on Canada's national team. Correct me if I'm wrong.
So, myself and our setter applied for Team Canada Next Gen. So it's a U22 national program on the beach. I'm not entirely sure how it works. I just know it's affiliated with the senior national team. It's not like the Olympic team or anything like that, but it's one of the stepping stones in Volleyball Canada for that. So we both applied and we both got accepted for the tryout in May. So I have to head down to the Volleyball Canada has a high performance indoor dome. That's like got indoor beach courts in it. So I got to go down there early May for 3 days to try out and then see where it goes from there.
Cool. So, I think I'm pretty sure you're a very vocal player. I know you are off the court. So how do you sort of implement being vocal into your game?
It's been a big change. So coming from a hockey background, everybody runs their mouth and is always saying little things to other guys, and it's part of the game. Whereas volleyball, it's not as much. And personally, I'm a super emotional player and emotional guy, which can work out really well for me because when it's working and I'm high, I'm high. But when it goes downhill, it's ugly. And so it's been a big thing to that I've actually been working on with our coach about like celebrating my teammate successes more than my own and sort of focusing on our side of the court. Volleyball's weird. It's one of the sports where you literally never physically interact with the other side of the net. Like you cannot cross the net, touch the net, nothing. So I try my best to sort of be a ball of energy that supports my team in the best I can, but it's been a bit of a change from the hockey scene where you can run your mouth and make little comments to guys on the other team to get on their skin, because personally in volleyball at least, I can't run my mouth against somebody else and still perform.
So up to date, what are some sort of challenges other than like the transition, obviously transitioning late? What are some challenges that you've sort of had to face maybe at the university level, and how have you sort of attempted to overcome those challenges?
So I came from a small town, put on a small town team. The team wasn't very good. I wasn't very good, but I was the guy on this team. And so coming into university after being like the big man on the team, you sort of come in with a chip on your shoulder or an idea that like I'm good. And then you come here and all of a sudden you're like the worst on the team. And so sort of being able to adapt to that and change your mindset to being a sponge and just soaking up all the knowledge you can was tough. And then the mental side of volleyball has been a really tough one for me. So in hockey, if I turn the puck over, like it just goes the other way, whatever. But in volleyball, like if I miss a pass, the ball goes flying off the wall and they blow the whistle and it's the other team's point. And everybody in the gym, your teammates, your coaches, your parents in the stands, they all know that it was your mistake and it's the end of a point. So sort of learning how to not play, worrying about that or being fearful was definitely probably the hardest challenge that I've had to focus on and move.
So going away from challenges, sort of what are your favorite moments of your university career so far?
So the first game I ever played in was tr against Trent at Trent. So a lot of people I know go to Trent. My parents were there. And it was my first year. I got subbed in. We were winning by a lot in the third set. We were up 2-0. I got subbed in as my first ever few points, and I got set the ball, and I hit the ball up, and I think it might still be going up. It was abysmal. In the time, I was like, this is so embarrassing, but now I laugh about it. But then this year, so when we had to play Waterloo, we played them on a Tuesday night, Tuesday, Wednesday, a Tuesday night down in Waterloo, and then we played H McMaster and Hamilton on the Saturday. So it made no real logistical point for us to play Tuesday, then get back from Waterloo at like 3 in the morning, Tuesday night or Wednesday morning, to then not practice Wednesday, then get back on the bus Thursday because we always travel the day before and go back down. So after we beat Waterloo, we stayed down south for the days and did stuff as a team and practiced at McMaster and their like in their auxiliary gym. And so we had to spend a lot of time as a team, and especially with like a young core, like a lot of the memories that I made on that trip are probably some of my fondest so far of my career and probably still will be.
Cool. So, oh yeah, I was gonna say, did you guys plan? I'm assuming it was after you beat Waterloo, it was just like a last minute, or did you guys like sort of plan that if you won, you were doing this, if you lost, you were just help coming home?
So our coach had kind of mentioned it as sort of like a an extrinsic motivation type idea that, hey, if we win, like we're staying down
Staying
there.
down.
So I know the plan was no matter what, regardless, we were going to stay down there the Tuesday night. So after we played, we were going to stay. And if we lost, we probably would have got up at 7 or 8 in the morning and hopped back on the bus to come north. And if we won, we would have stayed down there and went down to Hamilton right away.
Gotcha. I always like to ask sort of the people I talk to on our podcast. I know I personally, growing up playing hockey too, I had a lot of superstitions. I don't know if you had some playing hockey, but what are sort of like some volleyball superstitions that you go through like before a game or even before a practice that you just have to do
So
to, you know?
I have a bunch of crazy ones. A lot of the guys on my team, and we have a mental performance coach, and he doesn't love all of it because I'm super particular about a lot of them, and they're not super controllable. But some of my favorites are like on game day, I'm always like one of the first ones there. We play like right after the girls, and I'm normally there before the girls start their game. But every game day, at home, I have a certain spot that I go and it's like sort of secluded so I can get in the zone, and I roll out and warm up while I FaceTime my dad. And we talk about like the weather or like nothing volleyball related, sort of just help
Completely
me
random.
kind of relax and loosen up. Like this year, my parents were in Australia for 6 weeks.
Nice.
And so we'd be playing at 8 o'clock at night, and I'd be FaceTiming my dad, and it's like 7, 8, 9 in the morning, and he's just getting out of bed, but he's a good sport and did it. I love that one. I have a handshake with a few of the guys. I have one with another guy who plays left side, Tayden. That before any practice, before any game, after any timeout, we have to do it. Obviously, there's a service routine that everybody does.
Does that, yeah.
I've got one of those. I eat the same thing every game day at home.
Can you give us a little behind the scenes what that is?
It's actually kind of weird. I eat cabbage rolls every home game, and I buy the frozen ones from the Independent by Walmart. I don't know why.
Oh.
It's just happened, and it's just sort of that way now.
Yeah, that's a crazy one. Okay, my last sort of one. I know you mentioned to me you have 62 pair, 60 something pairs of shoes.
Like I'm pushing 45 right now.
45, okay, a bit much. But what sort of, why do you have so many shoes? Just sort
So I got introduced into like the basketball shoe. Like I'm not a guy who has like all the street shoes. For some reason, all of the shoes I have are like strictly on-court shoes. And so a guy who was, I was in my grade 11 year of high school was Victory Lapping, who I sort of clung on to and looked up to a lot. He was a bit of a sneakerhead and a shoe freak himself and got me into it. And I remember I had sold like my Xbox 360 and traded it in at like back when it was like EB Games to buy my first like nice pair of shoes. And so I fell in love with Kobe's right away, and I bought a lot of pairs of Kobe's, and unfortunately, since he's died, they're worth a lot of money now, so I don't want to sell them. And then from being here and being with, we have a few guys on our team who love shoes. We have a rookie who has like 4,000 pairs of shoes. He has so many. I've sort of like picked up more, and then guys trade shoes and you make deals. There's no real need for it. I just love them and they're cool, and yeah.
So I just got two more sort of add-on questions. How many of those pairs of shoes do you actually like consistently wear?
I'd say like probably 10 during a week. Like, so in our team room, we have like our stalls where we sit, obviously. Then there's like a cubby storage, and then like on top of that, everybody puts their shoes up there. And so I sit beside one of our rookies, Ben, who loves shoes too, and we've taken up a lot of the wall with our shoes, and then we have sneaker cubbies, a few of them around the team room, and I've claimed an entire stack of them with all my shoes. So I probably wear around 10 pairs throughout like a normal rotation. Some I bring in rarely, but I don't love how they feel or whatever, but probably 10.
So then, final one, what's like your favorite type of shoe? Whether it's basketball or whether it's like volleyball court shoe, like which one is your favorite one to wear?
To play in.
The player wear, whatever you want.
So my favorite shoe to play in, ironically, is it's an Adidas Crazy Flight 3.
Okay, yeah.
It's actually a woman's shoe. They don't make a men's shoe, so I have to wear like a size 13 and a half. And the pair I wear is one of our old alumni who's graduated that are destroyed. They were white, they're now sweaty yellow. I had my toenail fall off in one of them, and there's like blood in the toe box. I just love how the shoe feels. Other than that, I got a pair of KD12 Aunt Pearls. They're bright pink. They're super comfy that I love to wear. Or a lot of us now, do I have them? Yeah. A lot of us are wearing tennis shoes now.
Really?
Yeah. So our rookie setter came in with them and we're like, what are those? And he's like, they're tennis shoes. Don't hate on it until you try it. They're super cheap. They're like $70 at the outlet. And a lot of us swear by them. It's the best traction we've ever had. They're super soft. Like it's,
You wear them on court.
yeah, I wear them on court to play. And nobody really wears a true volleyball shoe anymore. There's only like Mizuno or Asics who makes them. And a lot of people don't like, they're super stiff. They don't have a whole lot of cushion. And the traction's often pretty bad.
Okay, interesting. Well, yeah, that's about all I got. I don't know if you have anything more you want to add. I know you claim to be a weekly listener, even though we haven't been weekly.
Hey, I subscribe to Valley Sports Talk always.
yeah, figured we had to get you on, but yeah, I appreciate you giving your time up.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Noah.